And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 158. I'm Silas Lindenstein, and with me co-hosting today is the wonderful Joe Greenhour. Joe.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
You're not Samantha, but
I am not, and the world is poorer for it.
And the world is poorer for it.
I'm not the best substitute. She's very good at what she does. Oh, she's great. I will do my best.
But he's less pregnant than she is right now. So,
I didn't know she was expecting. Oh, no, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to her.
Yeah. So she needed a night off to, let that little bambino, rest. But she'll be back next week. Welcome though, to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. And we're here, and this week's guest, from the East Coast, we have the wonderful Tom Stewart, funny man, paranormal expert. Remind me again, Tom, the name of your podcast, the paranormal podcast.
My Paranormal Story.
My Paranormal Story. Okay. You got to check that out. We do bring that up late in the podcast. It was actually... I'm now having vague flashes of memory of seeing some posts about this. I brought him on because he's a funny guy. He's a comedian out there in the New England area. He's based out of there. And that's why I wanted to have him on. And then I discovered all this paranormal things that he is into.
Yeah, it's like two personalities I have.
Yeah. It's like a two for one today.
So you have me back on Halloween and I'll be the paranormal guy.
Absolutely. I got to
tonight I'll be the comedy guy.
Yeah, that's what I want.
I got a couple of ghost stories too that, you know, I'd like to run by. Okay. Even if I just stop by for a minute, I'd like to, cause you know, I've never actually spoken to a paranormal investigator before. And I would actually like to get some professional, opinions on some of the things I experienced. But I had a haunted workplace, and everybody on staff knew the place was haunted, and I had to continually like try to play it down. But then lately, when I talked to the old staff members, we're all like, "Oh yeah, there was some ghost. That was some ghost shit."
That's crazy.
I would love to hear the stories. I hear them all the time.
And we'll have to get those on here. We'll do a ghost episode. We got to do like a ghost month. Joe, we'll do that.
Ghost month.
Hey, if you're listening to the show, if you enjoy the show, if you take a little laughter away from it, or I don't know, get a new perspective on something, please go give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you really love the show, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf, and for as little as $1 a month, become one of our League of Extraordinary Listeners members, you can even upgrade a little bit and become an Inner Circle member, like Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. Be one of these peeps and help support the show. And today's episode is brought to you by the sort of sister podcast of this, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. That is the top 25 podcast on Apple Podcasts, all about educating and empowering home buyers across the nation. And if you're looking to buy a home, whether it's in Seattle, I can help you out. Or if it's across the nation, I can connect you with the real estate agent almost anywhere in the country. So go ahead and you can email me at silas@blackandahalf.com, and I can take care of that for you.
You know, the paranormal stuff would work on that podcast too.
How to not buy a haunted house with special guests.
How to tell if your house is haunted before you move in.
That's
you should have Tom on and see if he can give you some insights what to look for in your home inspection to make sure your shit isn't haunted before you buy it.
Because that's not disclosable. You don't have to disclose it's haunted.
You don't have it
depends
weird,
on the state.
You don't have to disclose.
Real? Wait, hold on.
For real, in some states it's by law and some states they have to tell you if the house is haunted. In some states they tell you if there's been a death in the house in the past few years. Every state's got different laws based on
the
it.
Death thing, but there's a thing that you can claim that is actually haunted.
Yeah, I think I want to say Pennsylvania and one other state has haunted laws that if the house is believed to be haunted or has a legacy of being haunted, you have to let
Sylvania, you know.
Well, yeah.
Oh my God. I am going to go on my real estate Facebook groups right now and I got to find out who's had to deal with this. Cause that's amazing.
You know, it's weird. I recently was considering buying a sailboat with a friend of mine. We went and looked at this boat. We were thinking about going, boats are expensive. So we were like, if we buy it together and maybe get a third person, we can split the cost of buying this boat. And we're looking at this boat and man, like this boat is nice. It's really well kept. It's big and the price is like phenomenal and everything. And we're talking to the lady who's selling the boat. And then she tells us that the last time she went sailing on the boat was with her husband who died on a fucking boat. He died on the boat.
It's a haunted boat.
And I'm just like, okay, I'm not superstitious by nature, but my recessive sailing genes are really kicking in and I'm not buying a boat so that some guy fucking died on it.
Idea.
After that, I was just like, oh yeah, it's real nice. We'll be in touch. Da-da-da-da-da. And then I was talking to my friend. I said, no way.
But I'll tell you what though, there actually is a market out there. There actually are spirit mediums and some paranormal investigators who will be hired by people who are interested in buying a house to come in and check the house to see if it's haunted or to come in and like smudge it to get rid of the spirits and stuff. Like there actually is people out there who do that.
You know, the thing, there was a tip off for this boat too. I knew something was really weird because we went down and then, you know, it's a marina. So there's like, you know, 2000 boats there, some crazy number of boats. Right. And we're about to walk up and I'm like, why are we walking up to the boat that's covered in crows? It was like, it was so many crows on this boat. I'm like, well, there's all these boats here. Why is this boat the one that's got all the crows on it? And then, that was the first thing I thought. And then we got on the boat. I'm like, yeah, this boat's nice. And then at the end, she's like, oh, my husband died on the boat like a few months ago. Jesus. And I was just like, oh, that explains the crows.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, probably shouldn't have told you that.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. Okay, folks, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being supporters. So I want you to right now open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 158, Tom Stewart.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
Tom, actually, we all have something. We all have something in common here that we may not realize. Besides the obvious good looks.
I was going to say, what did she call you in bed?
Tom, are you still doing your new Food Friday?
Yes, they'll do it every Friday, every Friday.
Okay. Joe and I were doing a show. We did like 20 episodes of it called You Know What's Good With That, where we would try strange combinations that people said were good, that they liked, like weird, like Reese's peanut butter cups dipped in mayonnaise. That was something that they ate.
Did we eat that? I don't remember that one. That sounds pretty gross.
That was a nasty one, yeah.
The Oreo cookies and orange juice was pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually delicious. That's something I would have taken into the future with me. Looks like I have, but I have. Tom, but and one day I said, like, oh, one day we can get to just, like, these weird foods that come out. What got you started doing was that when you were doing radio?
Yeah, it actually started on the radio, on the morning show that I was hosting.
Okay.
It was just out of the blue. One day I heard about this weird food that had just come out. And I was like, you know, we should get this and try it on the radio just for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
And I went out and bought it and we tried it on a Friday morning and talked about it. And then next week, there was some other weird food that had come out, and I was like, let's do it again this Friday. And then it just became a bit. It became a benchmark every Friday.
Yeah. What was the first one? What was that first food?
I wish I could remember. It was probably 5-6 years ago, I guess, I first did it. Yeah, it was probably at least 5 years ago that I did it. And it wasn't an internet thing at the time. It wasn't on social media or anything. We were just doing it on the radio. And then I was like, you know what? This should be visual. This shouldn't just be audio. You know, people should see us eating this. So yeah. That's when I started filming it and putting it on Instagram and Facebook. And now I've got it on TikTok. But I don't do the radio show anymore, but I decided to just keep it going on the social media because that's where it was, you know, most popular anyway.
People love it. People love seeing other people try potentially gross shit, right?
Yeah.
Well, the facial reactions are the best. Watching people's face when they eat something, because you can't control it. There's no control. Your reaction is your natural reaction. It's what you do.
It's true. It's true. And that's what I've learned is the more popular ones are the ones that I tell the story with my face and not just what I'm saying. But I've tried not to go down that road of what's the grossest thing I can try. Like, I don't want it to be that.
Right.
You know, I don't want it to be Fear Factor. I want it to be whatever's out there that's new and trendy. I want to try it. It could be really, really good, but it could really suck.
What are some of the recent things you've had that the more recent memorable ones?
Let's see. Lately I haven't had any really memorable ones. The worst one I've had recently was the company that makes candy corn came out with flavored candy corn of Thanksgiving dinner. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
And so each there was like seven different flavored candy corns in the bag, and each one was something from your Thanksgiving Day table. So one tasted like turkey, one tasted like green beans, one tasted like mashed potatoes, tasted like cranberry sauce, and on and on. And everyone was worse than the one before it. Like, I was almost throwing up into a basket. It was so bad. They were just so bad. As bad as you imagined or worse. That was like unbelievable. It's very rare that I get I usually rate them 1 to 5, and 5 being the best. I very rarely get 5s. You know, nothing, because you got to be cheap with the 5. You can't just throw out 5s on everything. So I'm very stingy with the 5. So there's only been maybe a handful of items over the years that got 5 stars from me. And I can't even think of anything most recent. Probably the chocolate fudge dipped devil dogs. Those were definitely a 5. Yeah,
that sounds good.
It moved a little, didn't it? That's how good those were. Yeah.
Like, I feel like Lay's potato chips just decided.
Yep.
Like, they went crazy, right? A few years ago, and just like
they still do. They still do.
Yeah. No.
In the summer, they come out with like a dozen new weird off the wall flavors. One of the worst things I ever tried, this still makes me nauseous to think about it, was the lobster roll. It was New England lobster roll flavored Lay's potato chips. New England lobster roll. So I don't know if you guys know what that is. It's like a big bun with just lobster meat in it. And it's very big here in the summer in New England. And they took that and made it a potato chip.
Yeah,
and it was the closest I think I came to puking while doing the New Food Friday. It was the worst. Ugh.
It's, you know, food is it's a funny thing. Like, people love, it's the one thing I think that everyone feels like their opinion is valid.
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone's opinion is valid though. I mean, when you eat something,
but like, they're like, some people are apologetic, like, about movies or like what they think of it. But I feel like people have feelings about like food, and however unconfident they are in life, they'll tell you, no, this is good or this is bad.
Yeah. They'll take it personal if you don't like something they like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's food is very personal, but it's very subjective, universally subjective.
When I was a Lyft driver, I was, I decided to make a little postcard because all these people, like, people would always get in the car and ask, like, tourists would be like, hey, where should I eat? And, you know, like, I would forget anywhere to eat when someone asked me, like, as I'm just trying to drive them, like, oh, well, really, you should go. So I was like, I need a cheat sheet, and I should find out what other people, where they would go. And so I was like, I started asking people in the car, where would you go to, like, eat here? Or if they were from somewhere else, I asked them, hey, where, if I visited you, where should I go to try some like food from that area? And like after a week of doing that, I looked and I saw like, I was like, you know, my tips are pretty high this week. This is weird. I was like, does that have anything to do with the food talk? And so yeah. I started, like, I did it another week and I was like, whoa, hold on now. And we could see tips daily, right? So the next day, a full day, I stopped talking about food and just did normal conversations. My tips dropped, like, noticeably, yep. like a 20% drop. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, I talked about food and they went back up. The next day, I stopped and they went down. And I was like, holy crap, get people talking about food. And they tip more. It's amazing.
It's so ingrained in our culture. Like every culture, it's weird. Like one of the things you can just wholesale appropriate from another culture and and it's still considered a more respectful. Like I could walk down the street and if I'm wearing a sombrero, people are going to be like, dude, that's not okay. Yeah. Right. But if I'm eating a taco, they're like, where'd you get those tacos? You know, they want to know if it's a good that's taco. True. And, you know, it's weird, too, because like I love food from just about everywhere. But whenever I go somewhere, I always want to know, I want to eat the staples. Give me the thing that everybody eats every day. You eat rice and beans every day? Give me some rice and beans. Because one thing I've noticed is that everywhere I've gone, whenever I travel, if they tell me it's a delicacy, it's gross. It's gross. Like, I don't want to eat the brains from the goat. I don't care if it's a delicacy. I don't eat snails with butter and garlic. No, thank you. You know, like people have all these things. Oh, you should eat it. It's a delicacy, but it always ends up being something. You know, weird.
I wanted to start a TV show where I travel around the world and just order chicken fingers at every restaurant I go to. Just order thing. American foods.
Yeah. You know what's, see what you know what's weird? I'll tell you what's weird is when you go to other countries and then you stop by their Chinatown. Because Chinese food in America is, I'm told, I've never been to China, but I'm told that the food that we have in here is not as flavorful. It does not have the same, it doesn't taste right compared to what's in China.
None of our food is.
But if you go to like Mexico or Peru, stop by their Chinatown and have some of their Chinese food
now, like,
because their Chinese food A does not taste like the stuff from China, but B does not taste like the Chinese food here. It's like a whole different Chinese food. It's really crazy.
That's an interesting show there too. I want to see both of these shows. Chicken fingers around the world and
getting into Anthony Bourdain territory here.
Like a real low level.
But it's funny that you mentioned Lyft, though. I used to drive Uber and Lyft in Providence. And Providence is a huge restaurant city. And people were always asking where to eat. So I always had to. But I never go out to eat in Providence. If you're local, you don't go out to Providence very often. Yeah. And if you do, it's a little hole in the wall place. It's not like a touristy place. But I would always, it always helped if you knew things like that. It always knew if you knew the history too. I used to be like a tour guide in my Uber and it always helped with the tips big time.
Yeah.
But I used to ask, we get a lot of exchange students in the Providence area because of Brown University, Providence College and stuff. Okay. And I would always ask these people from other countries what they found the difference was with food from our country and theirs. And I would talk to people from Iraq, from Pakistan, from Israel and Germany and just all over. And they would always say the same thing, that the fast food in America is terrible, where in their country, it's so much better because it's actually made with fresh food and real food and not processed. Yeah. And when they come here, they feel like they're eating like plastic. Like they feel they can tell the difference of how bad it is. You know, I always thought that was interesting, that how poorly our food is.
You're right. But the thing is with fast food is it's weird because like I remember what McDonald's tasted like when I was a kid. And I don't eat it anymore because I don't think it tastes the same. Now your taste changes, you grow older, but I just, you know, like just the cheeseburger with cheese, meat and ketchup on it doesn't taste like it used to. And I think you're right. It's more plastic. It tastes more artificial.
It's just gotten more mass produced and more artificial. And it's just, like KFC is the big one. They would always say, oh, your KFC doesn't even taste like chicken. Back home, it tastes like real chicken. And that used to blow my mind when they would say that. It's like, wow, I wonder what it tastes like.
There was a rumor, and KFC tried to deny it. And then, like, there was some evidence that it might be true, but then they weren't, you know. And it became like this weird urban legend that KFC genetically designed, engineered this chicken that was force-fed protein on a tube. It had, like, no beak and no eyes and no feather. And it was just like, had these super huge legs and super huge, you know,
it was like body a for what? Chicken.
Yeah. They made this crazy genetically engineered chicken, right? And
all parts were from that one chicken. It would just regrow. Yep.
They had some. They were cloning this chicken, supposedly. Is this what they did? You know, and then KFC is like, this is ridiculous. We're denying this.
It wouldn't surprise me. Stuff.
But then there was like these articles that came out that said, no, actually, this might be true. So I don't know. It's kind
of
weird.
Well, I mean, they're cloning all kinds of meats now. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me if KFC was already doing it with chickens.
Would you eat cloned food?
I don't know. I'd probably try it. Like, I know they make those cloned, like, fake meat now, like hamburgers and stuff.
Oh, and yeah, I guess possible.
They're coming out with fake, like, steaks now. And I think I would tell the difference. I think I could tell the difference, and it wouldn't be the same. I think that primal urge, that primal instinct that we have when it comes to meat, that we'd be able to tell the difference. Like, this isn't something that was alive. This was, you know, mutated.
I agree with going vegetarian and trying to eat less meat. Especially with the environmental impact. But what I don't understand is, why do they keep trying to give us the fake meat? Like, just eat beans. If you think beans are better, then just go ahead and eat a bean. But, like, why do they got to make a thing?
They don't think we'll give it up. They don't think that we'll give it up. So they're, like, trying to wean us off.
It's never the same. It's like, you know, it's like it's meat, but it's not meat. And then, like, they try to do it with soda. Like, it's soda, but it's diet soda. And it doesn't taste the same. Like, you take the sugar out, but then you put this other thing. And now they have substitutes for the fake thing, right? Like, they have, like, fake sugar, diet, right? Diet. Yeah, and you know, and it never works. The thing that you want is always the thing itself. You never want the thing. My ex-wife had this night one time when she really wanted a cheeseburger, right? And it was late, and I think we just weren't going to go out. I can't remember, but she decided she was going to make a cheeseburger using veggie patties that we had in the freezer, like breakfast veggie patties. And then she put like a slice of, it was like Colby or some weird cheese on it. And then she didn't have any buns for burger buns. So she got like a French roll, and basically every ingredient was substituted. And then she ate this thing. And of course it was gross. And by the time she was done, she was full and still wished she had a hamburger, because she never actually scratched the itch. When you have the itch, you can't have an urge for bacon and then eat a fake bacon and have it scratch that itch, you know? It doesn't work.
What's the True. Is there a burger joint in Providence? Like, we have Dick's Hamburgers here. LA has In-N-Out.
In-N-Out. Yeah.
Texas has Whataburger.
I haven't gone into Providence in a while. I actually moved into Massachusetts a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I'm less than an hour away, but I'm trying to think. There were a few local burger places, but God, I don't even know if they're still there. Places come and go so fast, and with the pandemic, everything's closing down. But yeah, you would find a few burger places here and there. You know, they usually have like a big statue of a cow out front or something.
But there's no like three decade old burger place that you
the legacy of. Burger place that has like the in, history. In
one where I'm trying to think. I think there is one not in Providence. Like, I think there's one down in the south coast, but down towards the beaches in Rhode Island. I can't remember the name of it though, but I know there's one down
Virginia's
there.
Virginia is where Five Guys started.
Yeah, we have a couple of those around. Oh, I know. Stanley's is a place that's known for its hamburgers, and that place was around when I was a kid, and then it closed, and then like 5 or 6 years ago, it reopened again, just out of the blue, like 20 years later. I don't know if someone bought the rights to the name or what. I haven't gone, but I remember that place. We used to have a Chinese restaurant that used to sell like 10-cent hamburgers. Like, I don't know what was in the meat. But you could go there and get a 10-cent hamburger, like a 25-cent Coke, in like one of the old miniature glass bottles. It was like going into the 50s again. It was like 1950. I have no idea what was in these hamburgers. I mean, there were no cats anywhere in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But
it was, I hear bats are actually the one you have to watch out for now.
Well, yeah, apparently, yes. But since I've eaten at that restaurant, I'm probably immune to coronavirus. So.
Yeah, I want to ask Tom, are you a big movie guy?
Depends. I'm a huge horror film. I love horror movies.
Okay.
I'm not like huge into like the Marvel franchise or, you know, or things like that. You know, I'm definitely nerdy Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, but
okay. Yeah, that's why I liked you. I remember.
Yeah.
Hey, so I wanted to go over this list of, it was a personal list of movies coming out now in 2021. Like we think it's going to happen. Movie theaters mm-hmm. are opening. So, I did my top 10 movies that I'm most looking forward to, and I want to get your react, guys.
Reaction on these. I'm gonna write some of these down because I can't wait to go back to the movies.
Yeah, and some of them you may not care for, but some were delayed and some I didn't know about. First off, A Quiet Place 2.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
can't wait. Can't wait. That was such a good horror movie.
Joe, did you see A Quiet Place?
Okay, there was the one where they can't talk, and then there was the one where they can't look. I said Quiet Place is the one where they can't talk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't make any noise at all.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you, movie theater experiences, that was one of my top ones because just the whole theater being so quiet.
Yeah, if you didn't see it in the movie theater, you missed out if you didn't see it in theater because the silence. Like you could hear every little noise the people in the theater were making, the little crinkles of bags and people.
Yeah, that's the thing is there's breathing. Always a jerk off behind me who's got to talk through the whole thing. I got bad luck that way.
I think not in this one though. People were really
is this movie really pulled you in?
And like I'm just like, and then I was afraid eating my popcorn. Like I can't make noise.
It's true. It's like you didn't want to make noise because it was so quiet.
Yeah, I'd love to walk into the back of that theater to walk in the back and be like. It's a movie. Just yell it. Take everybody out.
Normally, like I think a sequel to this, I would have been like, I don't know, what are you doing? We already went through this. What are you? But you know, I think I kind of have trust in the writer there, from The Office.
Yeah, Krasinski.
Yeah, I got some trust there, and I think it does seem like. It's a little bit of prequel. I mean, it's in the future, but bouncing back.
I think he's going to bounce back and forth a little bit prequel and then a little bit after.
Yeah, so we know how it happened. Like, so I'm kind of.
It'll never be as good as the first one, but hopefully it's good.
Yeah,
you know, I have a feeling he's just going to repeat a lot of the same tricks that he used in the first one, mm-hmm. which were great, but. But, you know, I'm so desperate for entertainment right now.
You're like, what?
It'll probably be better than it should be.
Go for it.
Yeah, you want to make a movie called The Silent Place? You could just film it literally anybody's house during COVID because we're all living a quiet life right now.
Yeah, the movie theaters are really quiet right now.
Okay, the second one, In the Heights.
In the Heights?
It's a musical. It's from the same writer as. Hamilton, Lin-Manuel. Yeah, so it was a Broadway musical, but long before Hamilton came out. So
this is the opposite of the first movie. You got a movie where it was quiet, and now you have a movie where people spontaneously burst into song.
Like Jimmy Smits is in it, and
I think I saw a trailer for this.
Yeah, like but I'm very excited for it.
You lost me at musical though.
At musical,
so.
No.
Yeah.
Even Hamilton.
Not a musical guy.
Even
Hamilton? Yeah, I never even watched Hamilton. Nope, I've never seen Hamilton.
Give that a try.
I think the only musical I've ever seen was Spamalot. That was probably the only one. Spamalot. I think I saw it twice actually.
Okay, and that comes out 6/11. Quiet Place comes out 5/28. Black Widow. So, Marvel movie. You said you're not into
Marvel.
Them. Yeah.
It just doesn't, I don't know. There's so many of them. I'm fatigued by them. Like I was in on Iron Man and then from there I was like, all right, it's getting to be too many.
Yeah.
Like I can't keep up with everybody.
It is a
kind of agree. The Marvel thing though, here's what bothers me about Marvel is that if you tell me a story about a guy who makes a suit and you know, that he can fly around in with the weapons and everything. That cool. I like this story. And then you got another story about a guy who gets hit with gamma rays, and every time he gets mad, he turns into this giant green guy. Okay, that's also a cool story, sure. But then you got another story about a guy who gets bit by a radioactive spider, and then he turns into something. And then you got another story about a guy who takes this serum and becomes a super soldier. All right, all of these stories, fine. And then the Greek god, whatever, you know, Norse god, Thor, you know, you have all these. But then where I lose it is when you put them all together, right? Mm-hmm. This does not make any sense. This violates so many. You can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do that?
It doesn't make any sense. But it's like,
what do you mean? How do they not make sense together? They each have their limitations, and the other one can.
It's,
like,
each of these stories, though, it's
barely made sense on its own. And then, I mean, you know, then you just squeeze them all together, and now it's just lunacy. It's just lunacy. No.
I love all these great superpowers, and then you have one person who's like, I'm really good with a bow and arrow. That's my power.
Yeah, you have one guy who's just an archer.
Just did Robin you get Hood. Bit by something? No, I'm just practice. A lot of practice.
I just rob from the rich and steal from the poor. I mean, whatever. Yeah, I think it's just too much. They just put too much in it.
I just want simple stories. Like Black Panther was so good. You know, that was excellent. Yeah, that was an excellent. Keep it like that. I don't need to have Black 50 Hamlet. Million superheroes in one movie. It's overkill to me. I guess everyone loved it, but, you know, Marvel wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
It's fun, but I think part of what's getting lost is just the craft of storytelling, just the storytelling craft. If you just had, you know, they used to make movies just about regular people.
Okay.
Like they used to have movies about just people.
Old man Joe.
Look, for a long time, there used to be these things. They were these things, and they were made out of trees. They were called books. And most of the movies, most of the movies that were made from books. That's where a lot of stories came from.
The Marvel movies are made from
comic books. Yeah.
It's in the word. All right. Number four. This is going to be like, this is like the stupidest one probably on my list, but Jungle Cruise.
That movie's gonna rock. That's gonna be good.
The Rock. Yeah.
That's gonna be great.
This man
that didn't come out already?
Well, no, it was about to, I think, and then it got pulled. 7:30. I love The Rock films. Like he does anything, and I'm like, I'm on board. He's just it's fun.
There's gonna be a giant hippo comes out of the water and he's gonna do that thing with his eyebrows.
Jumanji, when they first said Jumanji was coming out, I thought it was gonna be awful, and that was freaking amazing. That was I love Jumanji. So I'm like, I'm giving this normally, like it's a film after a theme park ride. That sounds stupid. You put The Rock in it, I'm like, okay.
It feels like a cash grab. I'm not going to be rushing out to see that one.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I like The Rock in some roles, but he seems to not be able to say no to a role for some reason. Like he takes everything that's offered to him. He's doing a Marvel movie too, isn't he? Isn't he going to be Black Adam or some character?
I did read something about.
Like, yeah, I guess he's doing that now. And, you know, and I liked him on his TV show, that TV show Ballers. That was really good.
Oh,
he was perfect for that. But you know, how many more Jumanjis is he going to make?
I don't know. Bring him on. Okay. Then coming out, August 13th is a movie. It's called Respect. It's an Aretha Franklin biopic film.
Who's doing it though? Who's making it?
I got to look this up.
It could be either really good or really bad.
You know, these musician biopic movies, they run a formula, and it's really like always kind of the same the way they run these movies. There's the opening scene, and then they always have some like, you know, there's always something from their childhood where like someone's like, oh, hey, you've got musical talent. And then later there's like a scene where they're playing in some dive bar or some shithole. And everyone's like, oh, this person, you know, they're good. And then the manager's like, you suck. Here's $20, you know. And they're like, I'm going to be somebody someday, you know. And then there's like, you show them like getting big. And then there's got to be a scene where they're getting divorced and they're on drugs, right? It's like, they always run the same.
Show her some respect, Joe. Respect.
I'll put respect on her name.
Jennifer,
for sure.
Jennifer Hudson is going to star in it.
Oh, she can sing.
Well, yeah, she's definitely perfect for the role.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering who the screenwriter was, who the director is, because that could make a big deal.
Directed by Liesl Tommy. Not sure.
Don't know who that is.
Screenplay by Tracy Scott Wilson. Story by Tracy Scott Wilson and Callie Corey. So
yeah.
I haven't heard of it. It's well, a Metro
I'd,
Myers.
I'd probably watch it. I do like biopics like that. You know, but they're not all good. Some of them suck. So hopefully they do a good job with it. She deserves one.
$5 million budget, which is pretty small, which is nice. Nice seeing those little.
Yeah.
Nice seeing an indie film.
And $55 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A nice budget film.
I've heard that. I've actually the squeeze of the $20 million film. Like the $20 million films don't really happen much anymore. Like they're always going for these big. Like they're going for triples and home runs all the time now. They won't go for the
And everyone's like, why is AT&T in debt?
All
right, number six. I really was sad that this got moved back. Coming out 8/27, Candyman.
Oh, that's right. Ooh. They're remaking Candyman, right?
Yeah. With
now did they get the original guy to come back or no?
Oh, I don't know that, but this is
some back and forth about that. He was really fighting to get the job, but they were thinking about getting a younger actor.
Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't been.
I will say that, you know, after it's sitting in my cupboard for a year, all of that Halloween candy did not go bad. So they should probably get the old guy. Candy does not go bad.
Yeah. No. Well, it depends on the candy, but yeah.
I mean, if it's like Thanksgiving flavored candy corn, maybe not, you know.
I don't think the guy has had any work since that movie, so let him help him out. He probably needs the money.
Oh, it's Nia DaCosta directing. I thought it was Jordan Peele, but he's one of the writers.
Oh, that's a good sign then. If Jordan Peele's attached to it, then it could be good.
Yeah, that's the thing that made me. I knew that he was getting involved with Candyman, and so that's why I was excited about seeing it. I didn't realize.
I just love what Jordan Peele's done. He started out on like this weird. Like it was this weird sketch comedy thing that he, you know, Key and Peele doing.
It was great.
It was a great show that, you know, a lot of really good, funny writing and but then to see where he's gone with movies.
Yeah.
It's, oh my God. And they're good. These movies he's making are, you know, they're very good, engaging movies. So.
I think I would like him if I didn't know him hosting the Twilight Zone. But every time I watch it, I'm just waiting for him to I'm waiting for the joke.
Right.
Even though I know there's no joke, I'm like, nope, are you gonna what? No, no.
And he's done a good job with that revival, but I don't like him as the host either because I feel like he's doing a parody or a character or something.
Poor guy.
Hire someone else to do it. You know, yeah.
And Candyman's like, you know, the black horror film. What I liked, people have talked about. I read something that said Candyman is the perfect black horror film because it's like, I got no problem with you as long as you keep my name out of your mouth. You know, you say you bring in, say Candyman, he comes out. Okay, number seven coming out in September 3rd, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. Another Marvel film. But it's going to be the first like fully Asian Marvel film, which will be fascinating to see. Like,
yeah, it's kind of weird how they have all these Marvel movies and there's like nothing happening in Asia.
Yeah.
They got all these white superheroes and then they're like, we'll get a black one. We'll make a black one.
Well, he did go to Asia and met a Celtic woman. So.
Right. I mean, there's just not a whole lot in the Marvel universe that's been happening in Asia. And it's like where 2/3 of the world's population lives.
Right.
I mean, you mean to tell me that there's 1.5 billion people in India and not a single one of them is a superpowered mutant? You know, not one statistically.
Well, that's where you get a lot of the story. Yeah, I think that's where you get. Well, like Wanda was in Slovakia or something. One of those.
No, they made up a country for her. They made up a country.
That's right. They did. Didn't they? Akia, just something Akia. Okay, then number eight, Dune.
Dune's gonna be
sci-fi remake. Yep. It's coming out October 1st.
All these remakes. I mean,
yeah, it's true.
There's got to be original ideas out there in Hollywood, you know? I mean, Dune will probably be good, but.
That's right. Like, this is, I think.
I remember when I was a kid and it was, I think, 1989. And it was the year of sequels. Like Lethal Weapon 2 came out, Ghostbusters 2. It was all, and one of the, I think one of the Indiana Jones movies, maybe it was The Last Crusade. All these movies came out, and everybody said the same thing then, which was like, oh, come on, all these sequels. Doesn't Hollywood have any original ideas? And Hollywood's answer, because they were listening, their answer was to start making movies of old TV shows.
Yeah.
That's like, that was like their immediate answer. Worse. So when you're like, doesn't Hollywood have any original ideas? Like, they've been scraping the bottom of that barrel for a long
time.
Recycling
everything.
Every time something original does come out, you know, then the first thing they do is like, can we make a show? Can we make it a sequel? Can we, let's milk this goat.
Well, it's, you know, a lot of money for new properties. I think there's a word there, but like, okay. I don't think for the next 2 years, you're not going to see much as far as little dramas. Like they have got, well, they've got a backlog of 1 year of films of blockbusters that need to come out. They're already, that were already made. And I think they're just, I think they're so freaked out that people are not, people are already talking about the movie theaters dying anyway. I think they're so freaked out that they're going to be trying just to shove blockbusters in everywhere, wherever they can. Like,
yeah, but I think conversely is when, you know, they were talking about how the movie industry was like dying, but then, you know, we had this pandemic and everybody's stuck inside. And I think it's like a rubber band. People are going to snap because they're going to go the other way because they've all been locked in their houses. Now the idea of going somewhere to see something anywhere sounds really, really nice. You know, in fact, with this Kong versus Godzilla, they released it in theaters and streaming at the same time. And lo and behold, people still went to see it in the theater, even though you could just watch it at home. You know,
and that's that shows how I mean, I don't know if it's just people not taking the pandemic seriously or not or what. But for me, it's been, I don't know when the movies come out that I'm like, OK, this is risking coronavirus worthy of a film. I'm going to go out there. I mean, I'll be vaccinated. I'm like, I could bring something back to my kids, but. You know,
we'll see. You know, I think it's weird because with the vaccines and everything, we don't really know how that's going to play out. It could, these things could work and then we go back to more or less normal, or they could just kind of sort of work. And we're in this weird thing where it's not like we were before shut down, but it's not like where we were before the whole thing started, you know, where everybody's just walking around giving each other high fives. So, you know, I think it could be either way as far as like what it does to the movies. But in movie history, there is sort of a couple of situations that are not dissimilar. For example, in World War II in Europe, movies stopped. They didn't get any movies for like 5 years. And they were still making movies in Hollywood throughout the whole war.
Yeah.
And then what happened was when the war ended, there was like 5 or 6 years of movies that just got sent to Europe all at once. And the movie theaters were just in this deluge of titles. They had all these movies going at the same time. And that's where the term film noir came from, because the French saw all of these, you know, detective stories and cop movies and stuff that were coming out of Hollywood. And there was a style happening there, but people weren't really conscious to the style. And the French were like, we saw all these movies before World War II because we went to the movies all the time, but all these movies that we're watching now don't look like the movies that we watched before. And it was just the style that sort of evolved, but they weren't in the evolution. So American audiences didn't really even notice that the movies had evolved in stylistically. And then the French just got hit with all these movies at the same time. And they're like, this is a movement of movies. We're calling, you know, and they called it film noir, it's dark cinema, because, you know, they'd never seen anything, because the lighting in all these movies, you know, the way they did the lighting was very dark and dramatic. And it was a stylistic change that, you know, hadn't been there before. So it solidified, you know, we think of film noir now as like, oh, a period in history, but we might not even have a name for it if the French hadn't gone 5 years without movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just weird how these things
are going to reinvent itself.
Yeah.
It's going to reinvent itself. And, you know, they may have to take streaming into account. And, you know, because movies have ebbed and flowed. Theaters have ebbed and flowed in the United States, too, for different reasons. The invention of television hurt movie theaters. Cable television hurt movie theaters. Different things like that. Not as much as the war and you know, with France and everything. But I think it'll come back. I personally love going to the theater.
Oh, I love
so
it.
So I'll always Absolutely. Go.
Yeah. You know? I used to
but
go
I
to
do
the
think some people
dad.
Are spoiled, you know? Some people are spoiled. You can stay home and watch a movie. We'll stay home and watch it, but it's really not the same.
Well, when people tell me, like, they're like, oh, no, I have a sound bar, so it's like the same as being in a movie theater. And I was like,
no, it's
you
not.
Don't
it's never the same.
Understand nope. anything. Okay, my last two here real quick. Ghostbusters okay. Afterlife, so another
yes.
franchise, but
I'm on board.
I like seeing where it's going with that.
Who's in that? Is it the lady Ghostbusters, the kid Ghostbusters?
No, they killed the ladies.
No, it's the kids.
Yeah.
It's the kids, but the original Ghostbusters are in it, and they're basically passing the torch to the kids.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then,
but the trailer looks really, really good.
Yeah, the trailer is magnificent.
No, wait a minute. Is this the one with mm-hmm. Paul Rudd?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Oh, I thought that yes. already came out. Didn't that already come out?
It was about to.
No.
And
no.
Oh, weird. Oh, okay. And I was wondering why I hadn't seen it yet, because, you know, I don't know.
Because, yeah, shit happened. And the last one, Spider-Man No Way Home, another Marvel film, but it's the end of the three Tom Holland Spider-Man films, and then we get to see what happens after that for him, if he continues.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of disappointed that you didn't mention one.
Which
that's
one?
Coming yeah. out. Top Gun 2.
Ooh, that
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a preview for it in a movie theater. I saw a preview for it in a movie theater, and it was supposed to come out, and it didn't come out.
Yeah.
And then COVID, and then Tom Cruise is like, let's just wait, and then we'll release that. He also, Tom Cruise has been filming during COVID.
Yeah.
A new Mission Impossible.
That's a little famous. His,
yeah.
His little rant got famous during
that. Yeah. There's always a famous rant, you know.
Yeah,
so you throw it up there with what was it? Christian Bale one was my favorite, where he's yelling at a guy who walked across his line of sight.
Oh,
broke his character. It's like some poor guy is like carrying a roll of extension cord or something. Christian Bale starts yelling at him.
That's awesome. Tom, were you? I'm trying to remember how I first connected with you, and I thought it was through comedy. Were you a stand-up comic?
Before I am. I
you
still
are,
am.
You are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. 11 years now.
But you got a radio show, right?
Did that
yep. take you away from comedy, or did that help amplify it for you?
No, I think it all just, I was hoping it would amplify it for me. I was hoping that, you know, people would book me and be like, oh, hey, this guy's on the radio. He'll promote the show. Let's book him more often. And
yeah.
that never happened for some reason. Nobody, you know, nobody gave that much of a shit, really. But no, I had worked in radio for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 11 years ago, I went into comedy and was kind of doing both. And then I kind of just really got into the comedy and got away from radio, because radio is just not what it used to be. But then out of the blue, somebody I used to work with was now running a radio station and needed a morning show host. And he's like, hey, you want to have, you know, want to do a morning show? And it was probably the only thing I had never done in radio. I'd worked every position, every on-air shift,
right.
but I never had my own. I've been on morning shows, sidekick, news guy, sports guy, all that. Never had my own. So it was my bucket list moment. So I did that for like 3 years, and it just wasn't working out. Be too long of a story to tell, but
yeah.
it just didn't work out with me there. And so I'm just really focused on the stand-up comedy now. I'm doing that. I mean, I still do voiceover work and some audiobooks and things to make money, but it's mostly just the comedy now.
And were you all, was comedy a dream growing up at all, or was that?
Specifically as a stand-up comic, not necessarily. Radio was my dream. I mean, that was something I wanted to do since I was a little kid. I wanted to be a DJ. It was, you know, when I listened to the radio, I listened for the DJs. I didn't listen for the music
really?
As much. Yeah, I loved listening to DJs. And so as soon as I got out of high school, I went right to college for mass communications, left college, went to broadcasting school. Like, it was all I wanted to do.
What do you think it was about, like, did they just seem cool? Like the way they
liked how they had people on the radio, especially back then, you know, talking like the 80s, 70s and 80s, DJs were like a big deal. You know, they were the coolest people, you know what I mean? And they had this ability to just make everyone feel good in just 20 or 30 seconds by saying something, giving you some awesome trivia about your favorite band or talking about, you know, a concert that's coming to town or whatever. Like they just had this ability to reach so many people and they did it in such a personal way. Yeah. And I don't know, that just grabbed me. And so it was what I always wanted to do. So that's what I, you know, set out to do. And I accomplished it. I worked at a lot of different radio stations all around the New England area and got to work with a lot of amazing people. But comedy was something I always did. Like I've always been funny. I've always been able to just sit down and write a bit, write a joke. You know, I was hired as a comedy writer for a bunch of different radio morning shows. And I used to work and send bits out to other radio shows through like services and things. You know, just as a kid, I would always write things that were, if I did a book report, it'd be humor in it. You know, it was just something I always did. And you know, and it's that old cliche story. Everybody used to tell me I should do stand up, you know? And then one day I went and took a comedy class just for the hell of it. Someone said, "Hey, you should take this comedy class." And, "All right, I think I will." And I never stopped. I never stopped doing comedy after that. And so now it's what I do. And I love it.
In high school, like were you like book, you said book reports, like, Did you write kind of comedy in there? I do.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would write, you know, you had to do a book report. And so I would, you know, somewhere in there, I would squeeze in a funny line or something humorous in there. And, you know, and the teachers would always, they'd always give you a better credit for that. You know, like, you know, my humor ran my life. You know, I got out of everything with humor. You know what I mean? Sense of humor got me out of bad situation with parents, with teachers, with bullies. You know, I would talk my way out of speeding tickets with my humor. You know, it was just, you know, it's just something that's always been in me. And now I can make a living doing it, which is great.
Like you reminded me, I totally had forgotten, but I remember like, I think I was a freshman in high school and we had a writing assignment to like turn like Edgar Allan Poe's Cast of the Monteago into a short story or something. And I remember I wrote it as a, like, I had forgotten I had to do it. And I had this free period right before. And I just started writing. And I wrote it sort of as a detective story, but like a little bit of a comedy. And my teacher loved it. And she, like, read it to the whole class because she thought it was so funny. And it was the first time I think any teacher ever told me, like, you know, that I was funny, like, when I was supposed to be.
Yeah. Funny and creative. Yeah.
And yeah, I totally had forgotten about that.
But I think this was, didn't you have a Facebook page where you just posted like funny memes all the time back in the day? Or was that someone else?
It was probably someone else. I mean, I did post, okay. I mean, they weren't my own. I mean, I do post a lot of memes.
But it was, it might not have been you. It might've been somebody else because I've connected with so many people, you know, through Facebook over the years. But, and I was trying to remember where you and I became friends from.
There was like this 3 month period where I started adding people like that had enough connections, but I was like, maybe I'll go to the East Coast. Maybe I'll go to LA. I had this thing that I didn't want to add anybody until I worked with them so that there was an actual relationship. Yeah. But then some people were just really interesting to me. And I remember you being one of them, when I added him, but I was like, I'm glad I did.
We must've had a mutual friend somewhere along the way though.
Probably like a Kermit Apio or a Dwayne Goad, one of the real comics around here.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I keep seeing these super, super famous comics that show up, you know, and they'll have like five mutual friends on Facebook.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
I don't believe that's their page.
Yeah, I'm like, should I send a friend request? And I'm like, no, they don't care about me. They're not gonna take this. Because, you know, and then what am I gonna do if I end up friends with John Mulaney? Right? I'm gonna talk to him about his dog. He doesn't give a shit what I have to say. You know?
Like, Joan Greenhour thinks.
Yeah. Just check out this joke. Oh, this guy knows how to do about my dog.
And so Tom, do you feel optimistic about a future the future of comedy? Like,
do you? Yeah. What about this? Was like, you know, around here, I don't know what it's like over there, but around here, the shows, from what I've heard from people, are really strange, because it's just like they spread everybody out and they're only at like a quarter capacity, and, you know, and then people are wearing masks, so you can't see their faces. It's hard to read the room. You know, when you're on stage, it's really hard to figure out. And then,
yeah, I think it depends where you are. Here in New England, we're starting to get back again. I'm doing some regular shows already. The venues are like, they have different capacity rules and stuff, but a lot of the places really aren't enforcing it. Mm. Not to say that they're packing it in, but they're just, you know, you're supposed to have everyone 6 feet apart and all this, and it's definitely not happening. But, you know, I would say we're probably at 50 to 75% capacity in most places.
Oh, wow.
We're only supposed to be about 25%, yeah. But we're doing it. And, you know, and I think it's going to come back, because I'm noticing that the audiences are really, really just dying for entertainment. They're dying to laugh. Like, I feel like the audiences have been easier. Like, they're laughing at everything you say. Like, even the worst jokes, they're laughing. They just want to laugh. I mean, people have just been so cooped up.
Maybe I will get out there again.
So stressed out.
Now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, it's
fish in a barrel right now. I mean, I'm doing stupid COVID jokes and, you know, fat jokes. And I'm just like, oh, this is great. This is, you know, this is easy now, you know? And I was nervous going back, because I'm like, oh, I haven't done comedy really in like a year. And, you know, I had the butterflies again and everything, but man, it was like, it'd be like being the Olympics, but the judges are really easy and everything's a 10, you know, it's just like, oh, that was funny. Here's a 10. Like, it's really been good. And I think it's going to come back really strong. I have a company where I do fundraisers with stand-up comedy. Like, I help local charities and nonprofits make money by booking comedy shows with them. And that's really how I make my money.
Yeah.
And once we really get to full capacity or close to it, probably by the fall, I think I'm going to be super, super busy, because everyone's going to need to raise money. Sports, youth leagues.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone's behind.
Schools and charities and groups and organizations, they're all going to need to raise money, because they haven't done anything in a long time. So I feel like I'm going to be really busy. And the good thing about, like, I don't know how about your area, but in New England, it's really great doing comedy here, because there's so many cities nearby, so many venues within driving distance, that, you know, if you really hustle, you can work every weekend out here and get paid, you know?
Well, yeah, you can work a lot of weekends, you just can't get paid here.
It's not that dense here. It's really spread out more. You know, we're kind of close to Portland. So Seattle and Portland together kind of do feed off each other, but it's not, I don't think it's like the East Coast.
A lot of tours, like, not just comedy, music, will skip our area because there's not enough towns between that they can stop at without like driving 10 to 12 hours. So
you've got like, you got like three in a row. You got like Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, BC. And then, and people will put those three on a tour stop. But then, like, you know, going south, your next big city, San Francisco, and it's, you know, it's 1,000 miles away. And then there's nothing east, you know, you're going east. It's just Montana and Idaho.
Yeah. You know. It's like you back yourself into a corner, so they don't want it. So they skip us because of that. Like,
I can see this though, about what you're saying about it bouncing back, because there is this, like, you know, it's just been a traumatic experience that everybody in the world is experienced, and it's a sort of shared trauma, and you know, people are bummed out, and I think everybody going through this knows at least one person, if not many, that have been, you know, killed by this disease. So I think, you know, we're all kind of suffering from this, and then the need to laugh is real, and the need to be, you know, and the thing is about comedy that I've always enjoyed is that it's a communal thing. Anything involving a theater is a bunch of people going in, and then we're all paying attention to one person, and it's primal, because back in the day, you know, when the saber-toothed tiger was hunting us, we would hide in a cave with our fire, and to stay alive all night, somebody would get up and tell a story. And the whole tribe would sit and listen to, you know, the storyteller. And that's what we do. Only, you know, now it's stick jokes.
Yeah. I was wondering,
I've worked a few caves. It's not bad.
I've wondered about material. Because I was like, I mean, this was like 6 months ago, thinking like, when I come back, what the hell am I going to talk about? I've been wondering, like, can you just go up and tell? I was like, can I even tell the same type of jokes that I was before? Like, is there an elephant in the room of that we're all, everything is different yeah. now?
Well, I've approached it. I wrote a few COVID bits here and there, and, you know, and they've, some of them have worked, some of them haven't, but I'm not overdoing it because I feel like we're all kind of fatigued on the COVID thing. So if it's funny, it's funny. If it's not, don't bang people over the head with it. But I've been doing most of my same old stuff, but most of my stuff is pretty much, you know, universal. I can do it anytime. I try to write bits that I can do forever. You know, they're evergreen. They're not, they're not going to be too top. You know, the only one that I saw some problems with was I had some bits about going to the gym. Well, and a lot of us haven't been doing that. Yeah, like, so that like, one was kind of a tough one for a while.
You know, when you're talking to somebody, you know, close or mm-hmm. like, yeah. remember when you go to dinner?
Yeah. Hey. So, so I don't know, maybe you can do the jokes, but preface it as well when we used to, you know, or before the world ended or something. But, you know, I mean, I've written new bits about, you know, what it's like going to the supermarket now and, you know, because, you know, things have changed a little bit. So, you know, I mean, I used to do bits about birthdays and now I throw in a joke about, well, I guess we won't be blowing out candles anymore, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, you know, we'll adjust with it. We'll pivot. But for the most part, for my material anyways, most of it is pretty universal. The pandemic didn't really hurt it.
That's good. Yeah. Material's been my biggest worry. But now you made me, think about like, maybe I should May 1st, I'll be fully vaccinated and okay. Cleared to go. okay. So Tom, before I get you out of here, I want to go give you, we have the Black and a Half world famous seven questions. So seven questions we ask people the first time they come on the show. You know, there's no wrong answer. Just whatever comes to your mind first. And all right.
There. Let me stretch. Yeah. Hold on.
Okay. Yeah. Should do that.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
That's a long list. I'm nerdy about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, definitely movies, Star Wars. Definitely, I don't know. Typical nerdy stuff, video games, things like that.
Is there one that just like your do you have a go-to nerdy thing that people know, I just get this for Tom because
It would have to be, it would probably most likely be Star Wars or something cartoon related like Bugs Bunny or something. One of those two things. Yeah. Yeah. Why, you're going to buy me a present?
No. Maybe.
You know, like a Star Wars t-shirt or something extra large is fine.
What's something that you love to eat?
My favorite food would be a steak. I love a good steak. Get out the grill, put it on the grill. Oh, so good. I'm a meat and potatoes guy, you know, old fashioned Irish meat and potatoes guy.
Rare? How do you take your steak?
Medium or so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would rather it be undercooked than overcooked, but right around medium or so. Okay. Yeah. Get a nice ribeye and baked potato next to it. Oh man, that's the best.
What's something that you love to drink?
Something I love to drink. This is, I don't know, this might be a weird answer for you, but I love milk. I'm a big milk drinker.
No, that's great.
I drink a glass of whole milk every day at dinner since I can remember, pretty much every day. Yeah. I mean, you know, I gave up drinking 4 or 5 years ago. I gave up soda a few years ago. You know, right now I'm trying to lose my pandemic weight, so I'm drinking a lot of water. Uh-huh. But I never miss out on that one glass of milk at dinner time.
Do you have a favorite brand?
There's brands of milk?
Yeah.
Do they have brands?
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah, there's various dairies, but there's not, is there like,
oh yeah. Brands. Well, you've got Hood, you've got True Moo, here, I don't know. I don't think if you guys have it out there, but we have a milk company out here called Gorelick Farms, and they've got the best milk, by hands down the best milk. Yeah, I think it's a regional, like New England thing. Yeah,
my we get a Smith Brothers
Do you get the delivery? You get delivered, like the milkman comes by?
And my wife is a big...
That's the best milk. When it's the delivery and the old bottles. And
I used to get that.
That should be the TV show. Let's travel the world trying milk everywhere. That should be the TV show.
We said, what's your milk like? I'll have the milk. I had Smith Brothers, and then my car got stolen right when the Smith Brothers guy was here. And I could have swear to God he had something to do with it. And I canceled my milk. And then they found the car, and the guy who did it, it was a meth head, nothing to do with the milk. Yeah. But I never got the dairy service back.
My wife is the one who got me to go like, okay, there's a difference between milk, because she was like, no, this is so much better than the supermarket brands that we get.
You know, it's weird. When you go to Europe, their milk, it's got a flavor. It's taste milkier. It's just it's a milk.
a little extra milk in that.
It's weird, but it's, you know, like here it's more watery tasting. I don't know what to say other than that.
Okay. What kind of music do you love?
If I had to rank, the top one is probably the 80s hair bands. You know, give me some Van Halen and some Twisted Sister and some Aachen and Quiet Riot. And yeah, give me Hair Nation. I love that. But I kind of bounce all over, though. I mean, I loved hip hop. You know, it broke my heart seeing DMX pass away this past week. You know, I loved the hip hop grow, you know, in like the 90s, early 2000s. You know, I love most rock music. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, current artists like Shinedown, Foo Fighters, bands like that. You know, and, you know, I'll even listen to some oldies, you know, from back in the day, like Beatles or, you know, whatever. But yeah, hair bands be my number one.
Okay. What do you love to create?
I'm always creating something. Like I always have to be creating something. Lately it's podcasting. I have a paranormal podcast, which we could have done a whole other episode of this podcast on. But yeah, you can see it in the corner there. It's called My Paranormal Story, and every week or two, I put out an episode. It's just a story. I tell a story of a paranormal event that I experienced or witnessed. So it's firsthand accounts. Every episode is just a different story. There's no interviews or anything like that. It's just me painting the picture and putting you there. It's got spooky music behind it. And I spend most of my time doing that these days because I'm about to load my 49th episode. So it's really taking off. Like I'm getting a lot of downloads. So I've been really focusing on it because I think it's becoming something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm always creating something. I'm trying to spin that off into a second podcast where I tell paranormal stories that celebrities and famous people have had that I researched through the internet and whatnot. Because I love podcast. I think podcast is such a great new medium, and I kind of want to get involved in it before all the big companies ruin it in a couple of years, like they're going to. Because I already see it happening.
Yeah, they're trying.
But I mean, I'm always creating something, building a website or designing a t-shirt or, you know, I even wrote a book this year. I published a book during the pandemic.
You actually did it.
I'm always.
You're the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, probably about April or May, I was like, you know what? I'm always bitching that I don't have enough time to do all these things. And now I've got nothing but time. I better do at least one of these things. So I sat down and I wrote a book about ghost hunting, about paranormal investigation, because I did it for a number of years. And so I wrote a little book about it and just said, okay, I did it. I can cross that off my bucket list. I wrote a book. And now I kind of want to write more because I really like the process of it. But, you know, it's a little bit time consuming.
I had no idea about this paranormal stuff. I would have totally. No? Oh, I yeah. Oh. I would have. Now I'm going to have you back.
That's one of my biggest interests since I was a kid. Yeah, have me back around Halloween.
I just knew you as a funny guy on Facebook. Like, the comic and he's DJing.
It's so weird because I do the two. I'm known for comedy and I'm known for paranormal, and they couldn't be more opposite of each other. But yeah, I've had lots of experiences growing up. And then as an adult, I lived in a haunted house for a while. And I ended up becoming a paranormal investigator, just like, you know, you see on TV with ghost hunters and ghost adventures and those people. And I did it for a while. And I've collected all kinds of data and evidence and recordings and video. And I kind of got a comedy actually kind of got me out of the paranormal because I couldn't do both, and I had to choose, and comedy pays you and paranormal investigation doesn't. So, but I'm still,
this
I still
is
try
weird
to
me
involved.
To hear that somebody went to comedy because they were not getting
yes,
paid doing the other yeah. thing.
Well,
yeah, it wasn't paying a lot, but it was paying more than paranormal, which was nothing. It
hey, was, you know, I would rather get, drink tickets than ectoplasmic slime.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I've been to some of the most interesting, most historic places. I've had the luxury of being able to go into places that most people aren't allowed to even go in and experience things that would just blow your mind. I mean, I've collected evidence that, you know, the TV shows would like make a, you know, season finale out of, like they would be blown away by it. It's, there's really some interesting stuff going on out there, and I get really into that. So yeah, so my podcast for that is My Paranormal Story. Pretty simple, but it's on all the podcast networks and stuff.
Okay, all right.
I forgot what your question was.
It was, what do you love to create? And the
oh, okay. Off there. Yep.
What's a game you love to play?
Well, mostly I play video games a lot. That's what I do to kind of unplug and kind of detach from the world. I just kind of zone out into a video. Game, so you know, it could be anything. It could be a Madden football game, or it could be a, you know, it could be a shooting game like PUBG or you know, Call of Duty or something like that. I do love card games. I don't get to play them very often because there's not a lot of people in my orbit that play card games, but I love to play poker, or I love to play cribbage, or any kind of card game, really. I love cards.
Okay, and last question. Okay. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, mm-hmm. what do you want to be remembered for?
Probably just making people laugh. Yeah. Making them laugh, making them think. Yeah. That's always been my goal for everything I did, whether it was radio, whether it's comedy, whether it's paranormal podcasts. I just want people to think. I want them to escape and enjoy themselves. And, you know, and sometimes that can be laughter too.
Excellent.
Such a serious answer.
I know. No, it's perfect. Tom Stewart, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Really,
thanks for inviting me. I was so excited when you invited me. I was like, wow, he's really gotten to the bottom of the barrel for guests.
It was like, actually, it's been hard. I feel bad asking anybody on the East Coast to do the show.
Well, I mean, comedians were always up late anyway.
Yeah, that was my hope. And I was like, oh, I better ask people before the pandemic ends.
If we're, you know, we're either, you know, playing video games and being depressed, or writing jokes and hoping to get booked soon.
But awesome. Okay. Thank you so much. And Black and a Half. Live long and prosper.